B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Dynamic duo.
Don't feed me crap.
Of Boston Sports Radio.
Yeah, get it right, stupid.
Felger and Mass. Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Once again, from the temporary Tom Fear Tire Studio here at the NBC Media Center in Needham, Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Simulcast NBC Sports Boston. No Felger, no Mass. You got me, Big Jim Murray, here in the A-hole chair, facilitation station, as I like to refer to it as, alongside the Night Show Takeover, Adam Jones in the mass chair, Christian Arcan in my usual spot, and joining us via Zoom, I believe, first time I've talked to this man in quite a while.
Hey!
Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. What's up, Gasper?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing? Hey, Murray, you still work here.
Yes, he now refers to me, as I've come to find out, as Florida Man.
Florida Man, when I'm not on
Gasper Murray and now on the internet as well. Look, this, I've taken some vacations in Florida. What can I say? And quickly.
Hey, I'm happy for you, pal. I really am. I know, seriously, it's in this business, it's not always easy to get that vacation time. And you've paid your dues to get your vacation time. So I'm happy for you.
Well, thank you. And Gasper, brought to you by Premier Basement Waterproofing. Did this week's storms bring water into your basement, or is your home or business feeling humid and musty? If so, time to call our guy, the guru Mike Albert, for a French drain, a sub pump, or the industry-leading Santa Fe dehumidifier that is selling like crazy. You want to schedule with Crystal, call 844-LIVE-DRY, 844-LIVE-DRY, or visit premierbasement.net. And won't you all say it with me?
It's game over for water.
Yeah. So what's the bee in your proverbial bonnet there, Gasper? You want to talk Pats and the camp so far through the first 3 days? I see you tweeting up a storm about them. Where are you on the potential of Durant to Boston? What's the Red Sox and what a dumpster fire they are? But we can't sell. They could still be a playoff team, don't you know? There's a path. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, I mean, maybe like sort of like the old days, you know, when you used to spin the wheel, right? maybe you could just spin the wheel and just tell me where you want to start. I got takes on all of them.
Start with the Pats, because I think people are pumped that they're back. It looks like they've had really good attendance here this first 3 days of camp. What do you hold on with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just interesting when you look at it. It's so obvious that this is Mac Jones' team now. And even when you look at just the way they're conducting the drills and I thought it was interesting on day two. The defense stops the offense 10 straight times. And then they have an 11th time and the offense wins it on a pick play, which probably, you know, would be flagged in a real game. And it's like, oh, offense wins, you know, pushups for the defense, you know, feel good about yourself offense. I think there's a lot of positive reinforcement going on with the offense and Mac Jones, because I think that Bill Belichick realizes that that's really his ticket to competition and his ticket to closing the gap on the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East and being competitive for an AFC championship eventually is the quarterback. And you have to make him feel as good and as confident as possible. And you have to give him as much ownership of the team as possible. And I think the way they've set things up early, obviously there are prohibitions on what they can do. I mean, they couldn't put the pads on at this point if they wanted to, if Belichick wanted to, and that's obviously advantage offense. But I just think the way some of these drills are being set up and things that they're doing, it's being set up to build up Mac Jones and build up the confidence of that offense, which is necessary when you look at the fact last year that as good a season as they had in making the playoffs, you know, I've used this stat a million times and I'll use it again because it's relevant in today's NFL. They didn't win a single game where the other team scored 25 points or more. You have to be able to win those games. You have to win one or two like that if you're going to be a serious contender. And the way to win them is through Mac Jones.
Why has Bill been so complimentary? First Mac Jones and then Devon Godchow. Why has he been so complimentary?
Probably because he feels like he has to sell the team to ownership and to the fan base, because they didn't have they didn't have the same offseason they had the year before. They couldn't, you know, just based on cap space, right? So last offseason, you were sort of selling the fact that you had completely revitalized the team, completely refurbish the roster. You were selling sort of hope. Well, now you didn't really add much. I mean, you added Devontae Parker. I really liked that move. I thought they fleeced the Dolphins for him. I know the Dolphins added Cedric Wilson and Tyreek Hill, and they have Jalen Waddle, and they felt like they didn't need him, but that doesn't mean you have to send him to a division rival for, you know, pennies on the dollar. But there really was not a lot of excitement to sell in terms of external addition. So what do you have to sell? You have to sell the guys that are already on the roster. How do you do that? You tell everybody they're the greatest guys of all time.
So I saw some of your tweets today about some of the questions you had about camp, specifically the rookie wide receiver they selected in the second round, Tyquan Thornton. Yep. Why so many questions about him? And do you think that have the reports been so far he hasn't really popped in these first few days?
I mean, I was only there for day one. I'm just curious about it. Obviously, I think people should be curious based on the Patriots' drafting record overall at that position. We all know what it is. It hasn't been good. They're hoping that he'll break that. And the other element is that, you know, after him, you had picks of wide receivers in three of the next four picks, including three straight with George Pickens, Alec Pierce, and Sky Moore. So he's going to be compared to those guys the same way N'Keal Harry has been compared to Deebo Samuel and DK Metcalf and AJ Brown and Terry McLaurin. That's the measuring stick. So I'm just sort of curious from those that have been there for the entirety of training camp so far. What have you seen? I mean, when I read these recaps of training camp, his name doesn't come up often. That doesn't mean he's bad. Doesn't mean it's a terrible pick. It's just, what do you make of him so far? It doesn't seem like it's really a situation where he's announcing his presence to this point in camp. And I think he has a better chance than most rookie wide receivers that the Patriots have brought in over the last 20 years, just because they've streamlined the offense as they've told everybody. So streamlining it and trying to make it so guys can play faster, it would seem like he could pick it up and maybe carve out a role faster. And I'm also just curious in terms of how they're using him. Is he just going to be a one-trick pony, stretch the field, use that blazing speed? Or when he goes through these drills or he's in 11-on-11, are they using the entire route tree with him?
Gasper, what do you make of Malcolm Butler's comments yesterday where he said that Bill Belichick is basically an offensive coach now and he doesn't really hang out with the defense anymore? I thought maybe that was a little gamesmanship, like, wow, we're really killing the offense. Bill needs to go help them. Or is that maybe what's happening now? Is Bill more on the offensive side and that's permanently where he's going to be?
I think it's the latter, Arcan, but I do think it was a good point you bring up in terms of Butler. I mean, basically, I thought Butler was saying it's BS that we own the offense all day long in this drill. And at the end, you know, we have to do the pushups. I mean, honestly, if I were Bill, like, what would I have done? I would have let the offense have that last win, let them celebrate a little, and then been like, both teams are doing pushups, both sides, because the defense won the day. You know, I wouldn't let the offense feel so good about themselves, but I think he wants them to feel good about themselves. I think that's a big part of this camp. And I think Malcolm Butler just sort of, you know, stated the obvious in terms of Bill spending a lot of time with the offense. He's spending a lot of time building up the offense. You've heard the receivers say he's been sort of hands-on with them. I read some of the training camp observations today. You're saying that Bill Belichick is calling plays. I don't know if he's going to be out there in the regular season with the Andy Reid Cheesecake Factory menu or what, but there are other head coaches who call offensive plays. So Bill's very much invested in the offense, and I don't think that's by accident.
Shouldn't Bill have learned his lesson a year ago with, like, pumping up Mac Jones against the Jaguars and the Jets? And, like, if you don't really go out there and earn it, don't fake earn it. Like I feel like he tried to pump up Mac Jones last year against New York and Jacksonville, and he fell flat on his face at the end of the year. You seem to be alluding to him doing the same thing at training camp the other day. 10 reps, you can't get in the end zone. Fine, take an 11th, then we'll celebrate like you won the Super Bowl. Like, I feel like Bill should have learned his lesson with that last year.
No, it's a fair point, Jones. I mean, in fairness to Mac Jones, not all 10 of those reps were him. I mean, he was sharing.
No, I think it was six out of the 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't like he got stopped 10 straight times, just out of fairness. I think that, you know, Mac Jones has kind of become his guy because that's a guy that he can take credit for. And let's be honest, Bill Belichick has a lot riding on Mac Jones. Mac Jones is sort of his ticket to say, see, I don't need Tom Brady. It doesn't matter that Tom Brady won the Super Bowl in Tampa. He won with Bruce Arians. I'm going to win with Mac Jones. I can find another Tom Brady. I can make another Tom Brady. The thing that struck me the most about looking at the Patriots and where they're at and how they're approaching things is how quickly they basically have reverted back to what the blueprint was before when Brady was here, and how comfortable they seem just basically subbing in both in terms of on the field and the way they speak publicly about the team, just subbing in Mac Jones and saying like, well, we'll just do the same thing. Like the quarterback will just cover any roster holes we have. That's the way it goes. You know, there's not really much of a difference here. You know, we can win with any of the top 15 quarterbacks in the league, and Mac Jones is already that, and we think he's going to be better than that. So this is our formula. You know, we're just going to go back to this. This is not a formula that only works with Tom Brady or that worked because of the greatness of Tom Brady. It works because we say it works and because we find the right people. That to me is sort of the most interesting overriding thing, is how quickly and comfortably they feel about saying, well, Tom Brady out, Mac Jones in, not much of a difference, away we go.
Gasper, no one ever talks about either of these two guys, but the Patriots drafted two running backs this year. Have you seen hide or hair of them? Because I haven't heard their names. I don't know anything about them. And that was two draft picks they used.
Yeah, Pierre Strong's been limited. I think that's the guy that most people are probably looking at. You know, the guy out of South Dakota State. He's been limited. He hasn't been out there much for whatever reason, so you haven't seen a ton of him. You know, Kevin Harris, I think, is the other guy, right, from South Carolina, who was like a sixth-round pick.
Sixth-round pick,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's maybe, you know, the new Brandon Bolden if everything goes to plan. So I was only there again one day. What I've read of the other days, it doesn't sound like Pierre Strong is really in a position yet where he's full 100% go and can show what he can do.
All right, you want to talk to Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe? We've got a couple on the line, 617-779-0985. We can continue to talk about the Patriots in the first few days of camp. I still even want to get your thoughts on the Devon Godshaw extension and the why to it, Chris. We'll get to that, along with your thoughts on the latest on Kevin Durant possibly coming to the Boston Celtics. Coming up next here on Felger and Mass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, extension for Gotcha. What makes him somebody who wants to walk up for
Well, he's one of the best defensive linemen in the league. I'm glad we were able to work that out with Devon and Drew and get it done. So, obviously, both sides are happy. Contract signed and... go forward.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick one of the best defensive linemen in the game. That's why you give him the extension. Talking about Devon Godshaw at day two of training camp. It's Felger and Mazz here on Agenda-Free Friday. 4 o'clock hour means we're joined by Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. So when this extension, when this news broke, I think it was Ian Rappaport or Schefter that had it first, late Wednesday, Chris, did you have the same reaction that I did? And that was, huh?
I did, Jim. I mean, it was sort of like, I get the idea that the guy's in the last year of his contract and maybe you want to keep him moving forward, but it just seemed like a good amount of money to give him. And you only cleared about $1.5 million in cap space by doing the deal. I've never heard anybody refer to Devon Godshaw as one of the best defensive linemen in the league. Like, do you often hear his name mentioned along with Aaron Donald? Is that something that you've ever heard?
I don't even hear his name mentioned with Barmore and Lawrence Guy. Never mind, like, the best defensive lineman.
I didn't know who he was when they picked him up.
Me neither.
Like, I'd never heard his name before when they signed him. Yeah.
I mean, I knew him from, like, Miami, but, I mean, again, and you guys are sort of making my point, like, have you ever heard him even mentioned as one of the best defensive linemen in the division?
No, never. Never.
Never.
And someone I thought nailed it when this news broke, we were talking about it, and said, when I saw his name trending on Twitter, I thought he got cut. Like, when you saw his name out there, like, what, extension for him? What? Why? And to call him one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL is just patently false. And I know, Chris, you probably had the same thing thrown down your throat too from the
the Patriots Bobos. Everything that Bill does is the right thing. Well, yeah. PFF, Pro Football Focus, said that during the last eight games of regular season, he was ranked the second-best defensive lineman in the NFL. Well, the two games where he played the highest percentage of defensive snaps on the team were against the Colts, where he played 85%, and Tennessee, 2 weeks previous, where he played 78%. How did they fare against the run game in those games?
Yeah, not as well as you would have, you know, hoped, particularly against Tennessee without Derrick Henry. And if it weren't for some of those ridiculous fumbles Tennessee had, you know, that would have been a different game, maybe not outcome wise, but certainly closer, you know, towards the end. And then, you know, against Indy, they did a pretty good job bottling up Jonathan Taylor until they really needed it. I mean, if Bill had said, look, this guy's one of the best run pluggers in the league, I'll buy it, because that's why they got him in free agency to begin with. They needed to be better against the run, even though overall last year, you know, basically they were essentially the same. I mean, they gave up the exact same amount of yards, but it was better because they played 17 games instead of 16. But the reality is I didn't see this guy as a major impact player who made them significantly better against the run. He did make them better against the run, but not significantly better. And I would just say, when you start talking about guys being the best in the league at something, I'd be like, wow, that's a guy that might be able to force Josh Allen to punt. That's not Devon Godshaw.
Once. Yeah, like, you know, like he should be top five at his position. So I looked at this extension, and I'm a bad person, but I looked at this extension and I said, this might be an example of the game passing Bill Belichick by and like proof that he doesn't get it in 2022. Like, he's paying the big fat nose tackle in the middle of the line. He still thinks it's 1985 or 1986 or whatever, and he's trying to stop the K-gun offense, or I guess that'd be 1990 if I want to be factually accurate. Are you worried at all watching the Patriots the last few years stylistically, and I think you might be based on some of your commentary,
yeah,
about the game passing Bill by a little bit? The game's now played in space. The game, yep, is played with athletes. It's played fast. The Patriots have gotten bigger, slower, and don't feel like they've adapted, and I feel like Godshaw is one of those moves.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of passing him by, you know, that's maybe night show talk. That's a little strong for me, but I appreciate the take. But what I will say, though, what you said that I totally agree with there and sign off 100% is that, you know, maybe they haven't adapted, or not even maybe, they haven't adapted as quickly as they need to, because Bill is still valuing positions that the rest of the league maybe doesn't value the same way. And he's not valuing positions like wide receiver that basically everybody in the league values now. You know, I think Bill's traditional philosophy, and certainly it's served him well, all you have to do is look at the Super Bowl rings and the name of his boat, has been you build a team from the, you know, inside out. That's what you do, inside out. That's how we're going to build it. And what's sort of on the outside, whether it's cornerbacks on defense or wide receivers on offense, that's kind of fungible. We can find it. We can make it work. We're not going to spend a lot of money on it. But the league is going in a different direction because it's kind of become basketball on grass. And to your point, you're right. You know, those athletes on the outside, whether it's a corner like Jalen Ramsey or it's a wide receiver that you're talking about like Devontae Adams, those are some of the guys that are the difference makers and the game breakers and that really make a difference in the game. And that has changed. And now it's more the Devon Godshaws and the interior offensive line guys that are sort of fungible, yet Bill is still out here handing out, you know, $10 million AAV contracts to Godshaw and signing Shaq Mason to the contract he signed him to before he was traded. And there was a year they franchised Tooney and spent $24 million on guards. I mean, that's just not really in lockstep with the rest of the league.
Where are you on them overall, Chris? You know, that Vegas number is, the over-under is 8.5. Are you under or are you bullish on their prospects?
I'm over that. I'm over 8.5.
You are?
Yeah. Boo. I mean, I think they're going to win, you know, 9 or 10 games. I mean, it's not like I'm way over, but I feel like they'll win a minimum of 9 games. Minimum 9. That's how I feel about it.
Do you think that, you know, Miami's been overrated? Like, do you look at them as it's Bills and then the Patriots, or can they even vie for, you know, winning the division?
I don't think they'll win the division. I think they can vie for a playoff spot. It's going to be challenging because I think that there are some other teams that are similar to them in a lot of ways that got better. A team like Denver, you know, for example, with bringing in Russell Wilson, a team like the Colts, I think they're pretty similar to the Colts in a lot of ways. And now the Colts upgrade to Matt Ryan. A lot of this depends on Mac Jones. And does, you know, if Mac Jones makes a Joe Burrow-like leap, then all of a sudden, you know, the Patriots, I think, are squarely in the playoffs, and they're a very different team. Because if Bill's right, and if you can just go back to that blueprint they had for so many years with Brady, or at least some facsimile of it, where it's the quarterback is the guy that can paper over the lack of talent at some of these other positions, then they're really in business. And then the other part of it would be, while I do have concerns about the offensive play calling, if Bill's going to be involved in it, I'm less concerned. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I think you know how I feel. You know, if you have a great quarterback, like, it doesn't really matter who the coach is or what the coaches are doing. Like, you know, that makes all the difference. So if Mac Jones gets to that level of being Joe Burrow and is on his way to being great, then, you know, they can have anybody in there basically at offensive coordinator, and it will make it look really, really good.
This might be getting ahead of things. I don't know if we were going to talk Kyler Murray coming up or not. Yeah. But I'm just curious, yep, with his contract, and really I wanted to go more in the contract direction anyway. With his contract and, you know, the Deshaun Watson contract and who else am I missing this offseason? Derek Carr. Like, all these numbers, is it too early to start thinking about what Mac Jones may command and the Patriots' hesitance to potentially go there, considering – you know, they weren't willing to pay the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, I think here's the thing, and this is why they love Mac Jones, because he's just an empty vessel, and they just fill him with all this Patriot propaganda and speak. And I think he's as likely to take a below-market deal as Brady was when Brady was young. You know, they're going to completely brainwash him into taking below-market deals.
In his defense, he's the 15th overall pick compared to 199. So, like, I would think that would make him less eager to do it, but maybe, I mean, you would know better than I. That surprises
me. No, I mean, I wouldn't know better than you, but I just, the way he talks and what they've been able to sort of instill in him it just sort of feels like this is what Bill loves, is one of these guys who's sort of an empty vessel, just waiting for Bill to bring the tablets of football knowledge down from the mountain and hand them to him. I mean, that's where Mac Jones is right now. He's very impressionable and he's completely bought in. You know, at the end, with Tom, when Bill was pouring out the Kool-Aid, you know, Brady was looking around, and when no one was looking, was like dumping it on the carpet in the locker room. Whereas, like, Mac Jones is ready to drink it with a fire hose. So I think that's really what they like. And I think they'll be able to talk him into taking a deal that's a lot less than these other deals in the name of being able to build a better team around him, which, as Brady will tell you, that money didn't always go to that.
That's quite a visual, Chris. It's Mac Jones getting hosed down like a vixen in an 80s rock video. Like, yeah.
He's on the hood of like Mac Jones on the hood of a red Corvette. Yeah. He's getting hosed down by Bill with Patriot sugar Kool-Aid. Yeah.
All right, Chris, I want to get to your thoughts on the potential for Kevin Durant being traded to the Celtics. And I feel like you have a theory that maybe Danny Ainge could insert himself into this whole saga. So we'll touch on that with Gasper, Chris Gasper, the Boston Globe, here on Felger and Mazin, an Agenda Free Friday. First, the headlines with Arcand with an update on Trevor Story. Sounds like something ominous around Trevor Story for the Red Sox ahead of the series against the Milwaukee Brewers tonight at Fenway Park. So headlines here, and then back with more Gasper next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mazin.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mazin on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And I'm also on the record as saying I wouldn't do this trade if I was the Celtics, which I understand is maybe a minority position, but I look at this Celtics team, and as McMahon said, the most valuable thing you can find in the league right now are young two-way wing players. And the Celtics have built this team around two of them, and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And the thing I've appreciated about what Brad Stevens has done since he's gotten this job last summer is he has actively tried to build around those two guys. In other words, he has looked at the team and said, we need to maximize what we have around these two guys. And every move they've made has been in that vein. And it's why they took off last season when they moved on from Dennis Schroeder and Josh Richardson, guys that weren't great fits. It's why Malcolm Brogdon, assuming the chemistry with him and Marcus Smart doesn't get sideways, him coming off the bench and Marcus, you know, certainly waited a long time to be the starting point guard. I think they want to make sure he feels comfortable that he is going to be the starter still. That's going to help them in terms of some of that extra shot creation they didn't have. But this team has been built around those two guys, and they have a chance for me to be a championship level team for the next 5 to 7 years, assuming that Jalen resigns. And I'm not giving that up, even to take on Kevin Durant at this point, as great as Durant is.
Welcome back, Felder and Maz here on an agenda-free Friday. Mike and Tony off today, so it's Jim Murray, Adam Jones, Christian Arcan, and it's the 4 o'clock hour on a Friday. It means we're joined by Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. That was Tim Bontemps of ESPN, and when it comes to the potential of a Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant trade, he's anti-doing there, Gasper. Where are you on this? I mean, it's been a minute since we've talked. Now this is all, you know, this has all been drummed up again here. It felt like for a few days, like, well, the Celtics would have assets. They should do this. You have... you know, rumors out there that, you know, maybe the Celtics could be interested. It would make sense in terms of, you know, the assets that the Celtics have, all of that. And then it just died on a vine. And then out of nowhere, in the last week, it's all back. Would you do this deal? Do you think that there's any truth to the rumor that Brown might want out, look for his own thing? Where are you at in this whole Brown for KD thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Bontemps. I wouldn't do it. I think he laid out a pretty strong case there. And I've said this repeatedly when I've been asked about this. I have a great deal of respect for Kevin Durant. But I think as great an individual player as he is, and certainly one of the best of his generation, it doesn't necessarily translate to championship level teams the way you think it would, or maybe the way it does with, say, a LeBron James, in terms of making the guys around him better. He needs a pretty stacked deck to make it to the finals. That's what the history of his career says. I don't know if the deck would be stacked enough for him if he came to the Celtics, you know, in lieu of Jaylen Brown. And let me just ask you guys this question. Would you rather have, as the, you know, your best player on the team, assuming both guys are fully healthy, which is a huge assumption, would you rather have Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard?
Oh, Kawhi Leonard.
I think Durant. I think I would lean Durant too.
Okay, so tell me which one of those guys has won a championship being the guy.
It's definitely Kawhi. It's definitely Kawhi. But yeah, it is.
Being the guy on a team, like, without a ton of, like, I mean, he obviously had Kyle Lowry, but he had to elevate the guys around him. You know, it's Kawhi. And so obviously Durant, like, again, on paper, better player, better skill set, all those other things. But Kawhi was that guy. And to me, Kawhi is a realistic comp for Jaylen Brown in terms of that growth. Now, we'll probably never be the defensive player that Kawhi is, but when Kawhi Leonard came in the league, nobody thought that he had the skill set to do the things that he's done offensively when healthy. And while Jaylen Brown is not a natural in a lot of things offensively with the ball, and I know the turnovers and all that other stuff, I have to believe that, you know, Ime Udoka looks at him and, having had experience with Kawhi Leonard, says, like, there's some similarities here. And some of this stuff can be taught. And while he might never be as smooth as a Tatum or Durant, there's that, like, competitor element, making guys better around you element, rising to the occasion element, that you're not going to find in advanced NBA stats and you're not going to find on probasketballreference.com. That, to me, makes a difference.
So I love, in the clip that we just played there, that, you know, we're talking about a 5 to 7 year window for the Celtics. Like, I'm not sold any team in the NBA has 5 to 7 years the way they're built. Are you concerned at all about Jaylen not being here beyond his contract?
I mean, it's certainly a possibility, especially if you keep, you know, throwing him into trade rumors, and if he feels like they're not really committed to him. The hard part for me, and I know he signed with Donda Sports, and a lot of people look at that and feel like, okay, you know, that's Kanye West agency, and that means he's going to try and do something, you know, sort of unique or different. But who knows? Maybe, like, in his mind, unique and different is like Kyrie's version of, like, being a Maverick, which is, you know, you just do what everybody thinks you should do. So maybe we'll luck out and he'll re-sign. But the biggest thing for me is the Celtics turn around when Brown and Tatum, like, had a conversation and basically committed to each other. And is Brown willing to just walk away from that now? Like, was that just a 1 year thing, or were just at the time? Or because I took it as, like, are you in this, man? Yeah, I'm in this. Are you in this? Yeah, I'm in this. We're in this together. I thought that meant something, and maybe I'm being naive.
I think you are being naive, Gasper, but that's not my question. My question
not the first time. Not the first time, Arcan. Won't be the last.
Are we past the point of no return with Jaylen Brown? I mean, you just sort of touched on it right there. Yeah. He knows the offer's been made. There's been a counteroffer made. They're still negotiating. We saw this with Ray Allen in the O.J. Mayo trade back in 08 or whenever that was.
Yeah.
I guess it was later than that. This O.J. Mayo all over again here?
Oh, that's right. Oh, man. Words I never thought I'd hear. Is this O.J. Mayo all over again? You know, it's a good sports day when you hear those words. It could be. I mean, it's a good point. It's a really good point in terms of at a certain point, if you're going to keep dangling him out there and just sort of changing the deal a little bit, then you almost have to go through with it, right? Because you're sort of potentially alienating him to a point where even if you keep him, he's more inclined to leave after the 2 years are up, which is interesting to me. I mean, it would be amazing to me from a Celtics standpoint if they go through all of this, they don't want to pull the trigger on the deal because they don't want to give up Marcus Smart. So they don't do the deal, but it pisses off Jaylen Brown. And so 2 years from now, he leaves. I mean, that would be kind of like, you know, peak Celtics to me and peak Celtic fan base to me. Like, oh, you can't give up Marcus Smart in this deal. And then you end up losing the guy that really matters in the process.
So I know based on what you sent in the email chain this morning that you were talking to Brian Robb, B-Robb, our guy on producer on Saturdays, but also covering the Celtics for Mass Live.
Or B-Robb.
You were wondering as to whether or not Danny Ainge might crowbar himself into this whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, poor, you know, this is a great thing about being a guest on this show versus a caller is that I get to throw out my stupid, crazy trade proposals. And poor B-Robb has to field them. You know, I'm like, B-Robb, what do you think about this trade? I was on the trade machine for 30 minutes. I literally sent him an email, you know, with two trade proposals. I won't go into them in depth, but I do think that there is a possibility here for Danny Ainge to interject himself into this thing with the Celtics and the Nets. And maybe it's Ainge and Stevens kind of team up here to, you know, get Durant to the Celtics and to help Utah's rebuild in some way. And there's a couple of deals that do work in the trade machine that, you know, work out where maybe Donovan Mitchell is the guy that goes to Brooklyn and the Celtics end up with Durant. And, you know, Danny can be happy because he ends up with Marcus Smart in Utah and, you know, he ends up with Jaylen Brown for a couple of years and maybe he can just auction him off on his own. So I wouldn't be surprised if Danny jumped into this thing if he felt like there's a chance to get picks and to accelerate his rebuild there, particularly if he feels like, you know, with the Celtics, if the Celtics are going to take on Durant and he's been down that road a little bit with Garnett, right, and Pierce, you know, Durant's going to be 34. Like, how long is that window? People are always like, oh, you know, Durant has a 4-year contract. Jaylen Brown only has a 2-year contract. Do you really think Durant's going to be Durant 4 years from now?
No, probably not. I mean, there's a lot of basketball miles on him, but yeah, I think he can be Durant for the next two.
I was going to say for the next two or three, I think he could be.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're saying Danny would want to try to be the team 3 years down the line after that window is closed.
Bingo, Jones. Bingo. So I interject himself in this thing and take that Celtics pick in like 2027 or whatever that he thinks is going to be a really good pick because they're going to be done.
So I find the Danny thing interesting only because, and I don't know if your trade permutations went this way, but I could see Danny wanting to buy low on Kyrie. Like, I could see Danny saying, look, and I don't know that Kyrie would ever want to go play in Utah, but, you know, crazier things have happened. I could see Danny saying, this is a distressed asset I can get for borderline nothing. I'm in. And Danny, as far as I know, had always bent over backwards for Kyrie. I don't want to say he has a good relationship. I don't know about the relationship. But bent over backwards to try to keep Kyrie. Like, I could see Danny trying to get in on that distressed asset, and I've always kind of felt that way.
Well, let me throw another one at you because in one of the trades that I, you know, did in the trade machine, I'll post these on Twitter so people can rip them apart. But
nice.
in one of the deals, you're talking about distressed assets. One of the deals that works, that's a three-way deal between the Celtics and the Nets. The distressed asset that Utah ends up with is Ben Simmons. Do you think that Danny would be into that?
I don't know. I don't know. Danny likes non-shooters, but I don't know if he likes that extreme of a non-shooter.
That's a bit much.
Yeah.
I mean, he's younger. He's under contract. I mean, look, you know,
if he's getting a million picks, probably. But I don't know. I don't know if Danny likes him as a player. But I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. I don't know how he feels about Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I'm just saying. If you like distressed assets, right? I mean,
that's
Simmons
true.
Is he's younger. He's under contract.
But it's a big contract. Like Kyrie is what Kyrie's short money and you know minimal money in that 1 year deal or whatever he has left. Like you're attached to Simmons a lot longer. But maybe he thinks he could flip him and rehabilitate him. That's possible. Yeah,
which would be very Danny. Like I can rehabilitate this guy and then I'll flip him in a couple years. And a couple years from now, as bad as that contract looks now. It probably, if he rehabilitates him, it won't look that bad. I mean, that's I still remember when Danny signed Avery Bradley and I was like, this deal's terrible. And then like 2 years later, I was like, what a genius contract, you know, because it looked really bad at the time. But as the years went by and the cap exploded, it was like a steal of a contract. So, I mean, Danny is pretty good at that.
All right, one more segment to go with Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. You want to get on, ask Chris anything that we've discussed thus far in the Patriots training camp, Devon Godchow's contract, the Durant rumors, 617-779-0985. Got to touch on the Red Sox. You know, there's a path. I want to know if Chris agrees that there's a path with the Red Sox for making the playoffs and being buyers ahead of the trade deadline. We'll get to that next with your phone calls at 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Agenda-free Friday here on Felger and Mass. Mike and Tony out. It's Jim Murray, Christian Harkand, Adam Jones. Night Show Takeover in our final segment with Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. We have yet to touch on the Red Sox, who won last night, ended up splitting their series with Cleveland there, Chris. So maybe there's a little bit of wind in their sails. What do you say, pal? Is there a path to the Red Sox being buyers here ahead of the trade deadline?
There is a path, but I think it's because of the balancing act that Chaim Bloom's trying to do, which is basically to build the next great Red Sox team in the background and still be able to put up the, you know, appearance of true contention in the foreground with the current team. And I think that's what they're going to do. I don't love that. I understand why he's trying to do it. I think it's a really difficult balancing act. And I think when you try and do it, you could end up not really serving either need. If I were them, I would sell off, because the reality is, in an expanded playoff field, and I heard Alex Forrest say this the other day, and Chaim Bloom did too, because I was there when he addressed the media on Wednesday. Well, all you have to do is get in and anything can happen. And maybe that was true when the wild card was just a one game scenario, but now it's three games against another team in their stadium and all
right, all on the road.
Yeah. Because the Red Sox probably aren't going to be one of the teams that ends up hosting this thing when it's all said and done. If they get one of those wild cards, is that really worth it? You know, I mean, what kind of chance is that really? The Red Sox are clearly not a championship team. And if you're interested in winning championships, then you should be doing what's going to get you to that point ultimately. And if that's selling off these pieces for prospects, then that's what you should be doing.
Now I'm with you on this, and especially if you're not going to end up extending someone like Xander Bogaerts, but apparently they've told him, look, they're not going to be trading him this year. But, you know, they should be looking to trade someone like J.D. Martinez, Eovaldi.
Yes.
Even maybe Christian Vasquez.
Vasquez, definitely.
Do you have concerns, though, about Chaim Bloom and, I don't know, his eye for talent? It feels like he's got kind of the Danny Ainge gene, and I don't mean that as a compliment, that he, like, overvalues prospects or just looks at certain guys and sees upside where there really isn't a lot.
No, well, I mean, certainly some trades haven't worked out for him, no question about that. I think he's good at building a farm system. I think he's done a good job with that. I think he understands, you know, it's kind of like the guy or girl that, you know, goes out on a Friday night. It's a little bit of a numbers game, right? How many people are you willing to talk to have success? It's a little bit like that with prospects, right? How many prospects are you willing to bring in? You know, they're not all going to work out. I guess my concern sometimes is with the ideology philosophy. Like, I look at the Benintendi deal. That's one that really bothers me, not because they traded Andrew Benintendi, but just what they brought back in terms of Franchi Cordero. He's the type of lottery ticket guy that you like. That's a Tampa mentality. you know, which is the only way to get a guy with that type of power potential is to, you know, take a really flawed player and hope that we can iron out the flaws. It's like, no, you're the Boston Red Sox. You can get that player a number of ways. If you wanted to get that player in free agency this offseason in Aaron Judge and pay him $400 million, you could do it. You could get the finished version of that player. So that's what bothers me, is I think sometimes he's still in the Tampa mentality of, you know, we have to take chances. And I'll say this, guys, you know, I questioned him on this on Wednesday, and he was polite about it, but he politely chafed against it. I have some questions about his experience or capability to negotiate these $300 million contracts with Devers, or a contract worth more than $30 million in AAV with Bogarts, because he's never done it. And he's never even had to consider it. Because in Tampa, when anybody got to that level, it was just automatically, you're gone. We can't afford it.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, that's interesting. I hadn't considered that. Who was Tampa ever paying? I guess Wander Franco after he left. I'm curious, not to steer it away from Chaim Bloom, but like, I think we've all beaten up John Henry pretty good. I think we've all beaten up Chaim Bloom pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Alex Cora has skated a little bit. How much blame do you put on his plate for where things have gone here, especially the last couple of weeks?
I mean, not much. I've come around, I think, in some ways to... No, I always thought Cora was a good manager, but fundamentally, I sort of believe the impact of managers in baseball is overrated, except for with this guy. Like, I think this team would be dead in the water and a lot worse without Cora. He's able to instill in the team a level of confidence and a level of capability that, you know, maybe don't really match reality. Now, I understand some of the fundamental issues you see with guys on the field, but is that really the manager's fault? Or, I mean, what can he do? I mean, Franchi Cordero can't throw the ball to first base. Like, what's a manager supposed to do about that?
Well, let me to interject. Like Franchi Cordero in general, not his fault, but the second error, I kind of think is Cora's fault. Like, on some level, he said he talked to him after the first one. The message didn't land, and Cordero did it again 6 innings later. Like, I think that's kind of on the manager. Your message isn't landing. Like, that's another way of saying players might be tuning him out.
I mean, no, I just think it's capability, Jones, right? I mean, you know, you can have a personal trainer who's telling you how to bench press 225 20 times. Like, I'm not going to do
it. It's not
going
to work for me. That's
true. It's not going to work for me or for you. It doesn't matter what they say, and this is how you do it, and this is what your form needs to be, and this is what you need to eat. Like, it's just not going to happen. You know, not capable. And that's, to me, when I look at the roster, that's the problem. They've handed him a roster that in too many places is just not capable, and he's constantly playing, you know, reliever roulette. The other night, I mean, Tanner Houck was the right call. He's been the most reliable reliever, and he serves it up to Josh Naylor. So, I mean, I'm not absolving him like completely, because I think sometimes he lives in a reality distortion field where it's like, la, 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 like, we're great. And I find he's a little bit of the, you know, Baghdad Bob of baseball. Like, it's always good. They're always winning. The team's always capable. I find that aggravating, but I also think it works for him in a market like this with the players. And I see why he does it. And I think he's one of their real pluses.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you, too, in that this new wild card, the addition of this wild card, it's like this dangling carrot that these teams can use for fan base. Like, no, see, we still got a chance. It's like the worst thing that could have happened to them and how they run this operation.
Though. I hate it. Hey, Jim, before you send me off, we got to talk about O'Doyle getting that knee injury down in Tampa. Are you concerned?
Oh, I hate this. The interior of that Bucks line, and Jensen, as much as he's a hammerhead.
I had no idea what we were talking about. O'Doyle.
He's O'Doyle rules. He's a penalty waiting to happen, but there is a toughness intangible that they're going to miss there, the center for the Tampa Bay Bucks. How do you attack Brady? Up the middle? Oh, this is the worst thing that could have happened.
I know. It's not good. It's as much as I don't like O'Doyle rules, and he's always just like, you know, cruising for a penalty. They really do need him.
All right. Well, we will continue to be two ships passing in the night, my friend. It's good to talk to you today, but it will be a Murray-less Gasper and Murray tomorrow. Shocker. Chris will be live from Patriots training camp with Tim McCone tomorrow, starting at 11. First time ever. We're missing even Chris, like, with the exclamation points. You're going to miss the Gasper Murray training camp? Nothing I can do. The bachelor party I got to go to in Philadelphia. What can I say?
All right. Well, have a good time. I'll be down there with McCone, and you know, we'll be looking at the Patriots firsthand and telling you what's happening there.
All right. Tune in tomorrow starting 11. Gaspar Murray again without me. But Chris will be with Tim McConey here on 98.5 of Sports. I'm going to give, again, of course, follow all his columns at bostonglobe.com. And if you're old school and you pick up the paper as well, you know, do that. Felger style. One more hour to go here in an agenda-free Friday on Felger and Maz. You want to join us on anything, 617-779-0985. Arcan here with the headlines, and then back to your phone calls and see if we have any other takes at the top of the hour here as we wrap up on Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.